And actually, again, in the Colorado Springs abortion attack, the perpetrator had also violently abused his wife. And yes, I mean, I agree. I think that the degree to which women are living with everyday terror is undeniable, but we simply categorize it that way. I mean, women are making tens of thousands of calls to domestic violence shelters a day. The National Network to End Domestic Violence issues regular reports on these things. And so on the one hand, we're, you know, we have this national concern with countering violent extremism. But on the other hand, we're cutting social services to support the people who are on the front lines of recognizing and experiencing extreme violence. And that's an incoherent way to approach this problem.
Soraya Chemaly, I want to thank you for being with us, writer and journalist who's written about mass shootings and domestic violence. Her latest piece for Rolling Stone headlined in Orlando, as usual, domestic flag. We'll link to it at democracynow.org. That does it for our broadcast. Democracy Now! Is hiring a news producer and an office coordinator, as well as a senior video producer. You can go to our website at democracynow.org for details. And tonight I'll be speaking at the Fashion Institute of Technology here in New York with Irvin Jim, the General Secretary of the National Union of Metalworkers of South Africa, the largest union in South Africa. And thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Do you own a business? Have you considered promoting your work to Portland's most progressive audience? Of course, you know that KBOO is fiercely non-commercial and always will be, but we do look for local business partners to help sponsor or underwrite our programs. Underwriters receive acknowledgments during the shows that they underwrite, which lets listeners know who you are, what you do, and how to reach you. Everybody wins. Your business becomes aligned with KBOO's values of peace, justice, and multiculturalism, and KBOO is able to continue providing access, training, and programming for the entire community. To learn more about KBOO underwriting and to see a complete list of our sponsors, go to kboo.fm/underwriting or call Justin at 503-231-8032. Your clients are listening. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with our host, Joe Uris. Today we'll talk about guns, hate, and violence.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the World Beat PDX monthly series featuring Wamba on Tuesday, June 16th at the Analog Cafe in Portland. Wamba plays percussive jazz and funk with a strong World Beat influence, and will be playing two sets that evening. Again, that's Wamba on Tuesday, June 16th at the Analog 20. Session can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Pugs Fest, a festival of ideas, on June 18th at Tabor Space in Portland. PUGS stands for Portland Underground Graduate School, and the fest is a day full of workshops and talks from facing much, much more. Again, that's PUGS Fest, a festival of ideas, on June 18th at Tabor Space, 5441 Southeast Belmont Street in Portland. More information about the event can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Grendel's, a neighborhood coffee house offering organic coffee, sandwiches for breakfast and lunch, and Wi-Fi. Proud to support KBOO, Grendel's is open every day at East Burnside and 8th. Information at 503-595-9550 or grendelscoffee.com.
Black and I wore white. He would always win the fight. Bang, bang. Good morning. This is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial in Portland, Oregon. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Abe Proctor is not here. I am Joe Uris, and we're going to talk, I guess we have to talk really about what's going on, what happened in Orlando, and what we need to understand about not just that act, but the general climate of violence in this society, which is outrageous. Facts, yes, lots of them, and very sad. There are 27 shootings. In all over the world, Western world, there's less than five. So, we have a constitutional right to keep and bear arms, which is based essentially on the notion of having a militia that can function to defend the nation. This was part of the first 10 amendments. It's the second of those. And it really has to do with the experience of the American Revolution. But it is now enshrined, and it is supported by a vast array of gun makers and of the National Rifle Association, which operates on a totally paranoid schema and is supported by the gun industry and itself can control parts of the gun industry. So we'll talk about some of these issues, the gun issues, but then we'll also talk about the kind of violence that we're seeing, that we saw in Orlando, and some possible, I think probable, elements that caused it. Okay. First of all, in 1980, way back in 1980, there were 5.6 million guns in the United States. In 1981, the Glock came out. You know, the Glock, it's a pistol that can often pass unscrutinized, unnoted, because of the amount of plastic in it. In 82, there was a handgun freeze proposed for California. The NRA spent $5 million defeating that. In 1990, Colt put out the AR-15 or the M-16. Unfortunately, they failed to patent the weapon, which meant that many, many imitators could produce product, and the number of these semi-automatic, easily adjusted to be automatic rifles were produced. By 2011, there were 7 million semi-automatic weapons. And if you ever paid attention to the people who own these, they usually have more than one. And then many of them modify them to be automatic. This is a real thing. This is a popular thing. This is a patriotic thing. This is thought to be a cool thing, definitely identified with masculinity. In 92, by the way, Chicago had, I can't keep reading these things. It's just awful. There was an assault weapon ban attempted in 94. There was, even supported by Reagan, by 95, the NRA's attacks on the jackbooted thugs of the federal government became very popular. And it's really important to understand that there is a large segment of men, and a few women probably, but a large segment of men who honestly believe that owning one, or in many cases several of these weapons, some government that stands ready to impose communism or fascism or some other totalitarian a way of life on all of America. In other words, a conspiratorial view that sees government as Big Brother, and absolutely so. The irony of that is that many people on the left also see the government functioning in similar role, but don't have that particular response, although I want to say something here about that. During the crazy time of the Vietnam War, I knew many people, in the college and the university community and elsewhere, that really thought their duty was to purchase an AK-47 or an M-15 or whatever to be ready for the revolution. This delusion was a popular delusion among a small, relatively speaking, small part of the culture, but it had its impact. In 97, there was an attempt to have the trigger lock created for the pistol. In 98, Colt actually supported gun permits. In 99, essentially the Colt faced a boycott, and essentially the NRA won that argument. By 2000, Smith & Wesson attempted to create some kind of limits. In 2003, Teilhard Amendment was passed through Congress. And what it did was stop, it made it impossible for the Alcohol, Tobacco, and then Firearms Agency to release data on gun used in crimes, on guns used in crimes. In other words, we know by inference and we know by other data sources that there's a lot of use of guns, but officially we're not supposed to know. That's law. In 2004, the federal assault weapons ban expired, totally expired. And Bush Master sells the DC sniper weapons, and there was an award of $2.5 million to the victims of those two guys. In 2005, Congress passed the Protection of Lawful Commerce in Arms Act. And consequent to that, there was no limit on the sale of these weapons. In 2008, there was Barack Obama elected president. Now, this is really an important factor in all of this gun stuff. We like to think, and many of us truly believe, that America is heading toward a more egalitarian, less racist, less sexist, less homophobic society. In fact, the response to the election of an African-American, American-born president of the United States was an insanely vicious right-wing reaction. In Congress, I wish it wasn't so, but in Congress as well as nationally, those who saw this as part of a vast conspiracy of one sort or another, foothold consequent to that. And if you've been following, and I assume most of you have, the career of Barack Obama, it's hard to say what his politics, it's hard to say what his accomplishments would have been had there been a Congress that was willing to compromise, let alone cooperate. The force of this essentially racist response has been horrendous and has increased the paranoia on the right. It produces people like Donald Trump. It's known, by the way, in the gun world as the Barack boom. And military-style weapons just sales went through the roof. By 2013, the outdoor gun show attempted to ban these kinds of weapons, AR-15s and so on, and the NRA boycotted the show. The show collapsed. This was after the Newton massacre. In 2015, essentially, Walmart and others actually stopped selling these weapons. And in 2016, the Barrett 50 caliber super sniper rifle, which can shoot through concrete blocks, went on the market regularly. At 2,000 feet, it can shoot through concrete blocks. This is something you, aren't you lucky, can actually own. So at this point, we know that 75 million guns have been sold in recent history. Now, the question is, well, what do people do with those guns? Well, yes, what do people do with those guns? There are people who call themselves collectors who have, and I've seen this on television, you know, five or six AR. This is a masculinity-identified thing. And I don't want to get into the Freudian aspect of it, but it's hard to miss. We don't see a lot of women. We see a few who are really into this kind of weaponry. So let's just talk about what happened in Orlando from what we can understand, and it's still early. Here's some things we know. We know that the killer engaged in horrible domestic violence, and in fact his wife had to be rescued from him, that he got more and more crazy. We know that he went often to the club often to the club to see and perhaps participate in dancing. This suggests that he found it very appealing, which in turn, given his notions of masculinity, must have terrified him. There is a term used in psychiatry called homosexual panic, by which is meant that men identified strongly as masculine and heterosexual suddenly find themselves inexplicably attracted to other men. This makes great fear and anger and paranoia and a potential for violence. The gay scene, we have to understand, for no fault of its own, drew this guy to it. Then there is the availability of the notion of justification through a moral and religious struggle. That's the ISIS phenomenon. Remember that ISIS has said that the war against the West should be waged by individuals without any direct order from ISIS to kill, essentially kill people. Kill them particularly at what are called soft targets, nightclubs, sports events, walking down the street, you know, soft targets. So that's really happening. Then there's the authoritarian mindset itself, which is much linked, and correctly so, with notions of masculinity. Remember, it is not an accident, I don't think, that it was on Latin night, at the nightclub, that this attack took place. This is really, really important to understand. And sixth, there is, you know, you really have to understand the intersection of deep sexual shame, along with things like the cuts in social services to deal with issues like domestic violence. So this Omar Mateen, who is the child of people out of Afghanistan, finding enormous conflict, undoubtedly drawn to his own religious faith by tradition, but also with these deep guilts, all of this resolvable through an act of incredible evil and cruelty. I list these because it's really important to understand. And it's also important to understand that communities of color, minorities of all sorts, including communities who are not heterosexual, face serious threats from people just like this. I went down to Sunday in Northwest Portland, and I didn't stay very long. It was very sad. It was, to some degree, a beautiful gathering of people who cared very much for each other and felt deeply frightened and deeply oppressed and deeply defiant in the face of this horrible act. But, and this is really important, I also stopped to talk to a couple of police officers in command situations. And the exchanges with them, I said, being glib and stupid, gee, sure, a lot of police. It seems like this is the crowd that's least likely to. And this guy heading to, you know, in another location, heading to a gay pride event with a car full of guns. We have had threats on the phone. We have seen that the local gay person asked for police presence because people are genuinely and authentically and reasonably afraid. The reason why there's such a big police presence here today is because clearly there are these crazy people who have great hatred, who want to attack physically people who are in any way associated with what is thought of as the correct sexuality, which is heterosexuality. This is really scary and really true. At the same time, we face an enormous effort by the crazy person who's running for the Republican, as the Republican presidential candidate, who is pushing insane ideas, including a constant attack on Islam. This is a very scary situation. You have a president of the United States, a good man, I think, whose politics have been blocked consistently, whose politics often I disagree with, but who has been unable to get Congress to behave in any responsible way. We even have an effort to block his effort to put a very moderate person on the Supreme Court. In the context of all that, the murders in Orlando have to be seen as part of an increasing degree of violence and insanity within our society. So many guns, so many crazy people, so many angry men, so much violence and so much potential for violence. In the midst of a war created by the U.S., I think largely, flows into the United States to encourage entrepreneurial, if you will, violence on soft targets in this country. And we really need to talk about this. We really need to talk about it in all kinds of ways. I don't think I emphasized enough the element of race in all this. It was Latin night. I don't think that was an accident at the club. This is really, really archetypal, sadly archetypal American violence. And we, all of us, need to understand it, not just in terms of the attack, which is very real, on homosexual and other communities, but also an attack on persons who are other in terms of their skin color or cultural heritage, persons who are in any way unconventional. There is a real notion, this guy does not fit that particular pattern, but there's a real notion that there will come a time very soon when all those AR-14s will have to be used to fight a government of the United States, a totalitarian government of indescribable horror. This is a real thing. And when you link it with domestic violence, when you link it with the notion of a male prerogative, when you link it with racism, when you link it with the calls of ISIS and so on, we in trouble. We, as a nation, are in serious trouble. And with all those weapons out there, this is an untenable situation. And one of the ironies is even, which is unlikely, if we were to ban these weapons, we cannot go back and grab them. To seize them would be to confirm the NRA's weird position on these weapons. Serious situation. My question for you is, what is to be done? How do we deal with this? How do we see this? And how do we educate ourselves and educate our population to deal with this problem? Because it's not going to go away. I mean, we know that these mass killings are a consistent part of modern life. And we also know the National Rifle Association has plenty of money, that the right wing, to some inestimable degree, is essentially supporting this paranoia. And we also know that this election is about this paranoia. And we see it in the way in which right-wingers responded, naive people, many of them, to the election of an African-American as president, trying to say that he was not born here, trying to say he's a secret Muslim. We even have Trump making vague references to Obama supporting ISIS. I mean, that's really happening on the major media. So I want to hear from you. 231-8187. Sonny, you're on the air.
Trump was endorsed by the KKK, and that's hardly getting any notice. Trump has mocked Hillary for mentioning that she may have, or that she does have, some American Indian descent, calling her Pocahontas.
Well, that wasn't Hillary. That was Elizabeth Warren.
Oh, well, he keeps picking on somebody about that. I'm out here in a neighborhood where, I've told you before, we ended up with a noose on our fence.
Oh, yeah, you told us.
Okay, yeah, but the thing about it is when I first came to work, persons in the neighborhood that my employer, an elderly man, are from surgery, and so I went out and I got a gun. And next door, those people lived next door, and some of them turned out to be real problems, not just for myself, but for the neighborhood. And they were evicted, but we didn't have anything to do with it. And then recently, another neighbor has been prowling around the property, and who has clearly got serious, serious mental health issues known by the whole neighborhood. And I've had to get up in the middle of the night and stand underneath the kitchen light and hold my gun up and say, "You've got to get off this property."
Wow.
Okay, so if I didn't have a gun, that person would have entered our home probably already, because he's attempted to enter other people's. He's a real menace. And anyway, he's a peeping Tom, and et cetera, et cetera. But the thing is, so lots of women are more and more comfortable with guns, and the situation for women and elderly in this country is if you're living on your own, you better have a gun. And the last thing I wanted to say is there was a program yesterday, part of Public Affairs on KBOO, which is always so good, about screenagers and how possibly contact with technology is beginning to diminish the thinking capacity of brains. Well, if you look at since the onset of Hollywood and the continual indoctrination into nothing but male behavior equals violence. Basically, the only portrayal you see of male behavior mostly on TV is they're either having sex or they're in the middle of an act of violence, particularly upon women or on the world. And I think we're all suffering from a grotesque indoctrination, and the sooner we get away from all of this programming, which has also made horrible wars allowable everywhere all the time, just as part and parcel of typical male behavior and human functioning, we've just got to turn off the technology, get away from it. And I'm glad I do have a gun.
Okay, well, I'm not going to engage in an argument about whether or not you should have a gun.
No.
But I do appreciate your comment, and I thank you. I have to say that maybe we all need to be brave enough not to have a gun. Anyway, all right, 318-187. Corey, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm a veteran, and the lady that just called, I left the military in 2005, and I don't own a gun. The reason being is that I have used M16. I've used a sniper rifle. I've used a grenade launcher. These weapons are made to kill human beings. So when I hear people saying, well, AR-15, it's a sport rifle, I've used the AR-15 before on, say, a pig or a deer, and there's not much left. I mean, I don't, you know, it, unless you just want automated sausage. So when I hear people saying, oh, it's for sport,
yeah,
I'm thinking, well, what type of sport? Because if I am hunting, say, for food, I want to cause the minimum amount of damage to a deer or something like that, because I want to, you know, you want to dress it down. I'm from Texas, so I know all these terminology. You know, you want to dress it down. You don't want to cause that much damage. So I just find it erroneous, and it's just a straight-up lie that these weapons are for sport hunting, because they're not. The damage that you can cause with a semi-automatic AR-15, if you use it on a deer, it's a lot of damage. These were meant to kill human beings. And so, and look, I understand the caller that just called it. If she's a female, she feels unsafe. I understand that. I know for me, and I agree with your point, I haven't touched a weapon in 11 years. I don't feel the need to. If it ever comes to that, you know, then I'll read them this weekend in Orlando. It does make me second guess a little, because I did go online and I found an online company that will allow you to get your permit. I went online, paid the money, and within 5 minutes I had a certificate. I didn't even have to, I just took the test. I didn't have to go through the training. I just took the test because I know enough about weapons to take the test and pass it. I can go online and do that within 5 minutes. So the ease to where we can get weapons, and then I can purchase an AR-15 online and have it delivered by tomorrow, it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. It really doesn't. The fact that this gentleman got a hold of an AR-15 after he was investigated, I'm sorry, it wasn't an AR, it was just a fancier AR-15, if you ask me. After he was investigated by the FBI because we refused to allow background checks, is mm-hmm. ridiculous. It's beyond ridiculous.
Well, I just to clear one little technical question on these weapons or issue. The developers of the weapon, which was developed, of course, for the military to replace the M1, the Garand rifle, failed to patent the design. And I'm going to have to let you go, but that fact created the opportunity for almost any manufacturer to make a similar weapon. I don't want to talk guns. I don't want to get into a gun conversation because, first of all, it creeps me out, frankly. And second of all, it's pretty arcane. But I think what we really need to address is the anger, the rage, and the deep-seated fear that exists within our country. It's very, very frightening. I also think that many of us had thought, that with the creation of the civil rights movement, with the creation of the legalization of gay marriage, et cetera, we were over this. We were over these prejudices. Well, we're not. There is a significant part of the population that is filled with hate and fear, and I think in many cases with men, a kind of panic around issues of sexuality that produces in them an incredible reaction of anger that makes them very, very dangerous. I want to hear from all of you. 231-8187. Michael, you're on the air.
Okay, I know you just said you didn't want to talk about guns, but there's some important things that you mentioned that I want to talk about. For metal in them and are detectable by...
Yeah, it turns out they are, but that was the original fear about them.
I know, but that was... See, if you ever wanted to bring the country together on this, then the people who know about guns hear the people who are anti-gun and who know nothing about guns say ridiculous things like that, and it completely discredits the automatic. And, you know, if... The conversation needs to be based on some kind of reality.
Well, wait a minute. I'm not. You're puzzling me here. You're saying, well, I too casually dismissed the amount of plastic in the Glock, suggesting that, and which was the original fear, that it would pass scrutiny and not be noticed by X-rays. That turned out not to be true.
Let me finish.
Go ahead. As to the question of a semi-automatic versus automatic weapon, you know, or you should know, that you can buy the kit to change that weapon from semi-automatic to automatic. It's an incredible advantage when you have a huge amount of bullets available to you. There's no logical reason for such a weapon to be in the hands of civilians. It doesn't really make sense.
Well, you know, you can make that argument, but there are tons of civilians who have these things and use them as hobbyists. And in fact, you can use them for hunting because since it's semi-automatic, the deer...
...in a variety of ways. I'm going to argue that this is a weapon that was essentially designed for military use. The actual bullet itself is designed in such a manner that once it hits anything solid, it starts tumbling and rips out tissue. It is not the same as the hunting rifles that I had experience with in the past. This is not a sporting weapon. This is a killing weapon. And its purpose is essentially not to kill a deer or a pig or a cow. Its purpose is to kill people. That's what it was designed for. There's no question about that. You're not going to argue against that.
I'm not going to argue against that. However, there's like a ton of hobbyists out there that have these things now. There are so many of them out there and so many spare parts for them that it's not even practical to ban them. Even the assault weapons ban for the 10 years it was in effect didn't ban them. It just forced to do ridiculous things like leave off the bayonet lugs as if people were running around with bayonets on these things. I mean, you know, if you want to have a rational conversation about this stuff, it has to be based on reality.
So you're saying, let me get this straight, because I just am a little bit puzzled here. You're saying the weapons are out there, therefore there's nothing that can be done about it?
Well, the weapons are out there, and tons of them are out there. And if you can think of a practical way for the government to go and take all of these away from everybody who has them? I mean, are you serious?
No, that's not what I think, number one. 3-minute rule. I'm going to let you go.
Okay, let me just say one quick thing.
Okay, go ahead. One quick thing.
Gun. There are plans floating around on the internet now where you can take a 3D printer and print a completely plastic gun that will fire a few times anyway before it breaks.
Yes.
So you have a much bigger problem than the fictitious thing about the Glock.
Okay. Thanks for the call. Yes, we are a nation that is not only armed, but overarmed. Yes, we have no controls over this. Yes, it's beyond any kind of reason. And there is no control on who gets, all of that is real. And all of that contributes to the horrible violence we're seeing. But it is clearly more of a question of how the ethics, the morality, the understanding of the relationship, the civil relationship between people. And right now, we are a society pulled apart by all kinds of fears, most of them irrational. We have incredible xenophobia. We have Islamophobia. We have all kinds of racism. We have misogyny, which is not even acknowledged in this context. This is beginning to clearly lead us down a road of potential disaster. And I think to say, well, we can't take the guns away from people. No, probably we can't. But we can make it normatively unacceptable for people to be walking around, the opposite of what's happening, with guns. In Portland, Oregon, people walk around with concealed weapon permits or carrying. A major radio host in this city is proud of the fact that he carries a pistol at all times. All the evidence about carrying guns, all the evidence about having guns, indicates that it is an incredibly stupid way to approach the problem. And, of course, there's this enormous degree of racism and so on that's hidden in all of this. And I think it's really important to understand, for example, this year already, 23 people have been shot by toddlers and kids under five. It beggars the imagination. It's beyond anything that's rational. We have so many guns. Any other Western nation does not have this issue, does not have this problem. And I think it's rationalized by a frontier mentality that simply makes no sense at all. And I think it's time that all of us draw up in our own houses, in our own homes, in our own communities, in our own nation, some understanding, some moral understanding about this issue. I don't know. I'm not simply decrying, though. I'm saying this enough is enough, and we have to do whatever is necessary. I don't want to ban guns. I don't want to get into a Second Amendment argument. Analyze their own behavior. Think about what they're doing. Proudly showing off his seven semi-automatic weapons. I mean, I'm sorry. You can carry two and shoot them? Seven? This is a creepy, weird world. I want to hear from you. 231-8187. LJ.
Good morning.
Wow, okay.
All right. Or to quote Robin Williams, good morning, Vietnam. All right, Joe. Look, we're a very violent country. Look at our history. Our response to the problem has always been violence. President Obama, every Tuesday or Thursday, and goes through his deck of playing cards to find out who we should target for assassination today. Obama has already targeted two American citizens who happened to be Islamic, and they were both killed. One was 16 years old. All right. So when the Imperial Empire's is to act in a violent way, what kind of example does that set for the citizen? Number one. Number two, in 1997, there was a horrific tragedy in Australia, and now Australia has literally banned guns, and violence is down 50%. Those are the statistics, all right? And it happened state by state. So if we want to do something as a state, we need to start the ball rolling about banning assault weapons in Oregon. I don't want to interfere with the hunters in eastern Oregon or the people who live, we're urban, but there are people who are rural who use guns to hunt on a daily basis. It should not affect those people. And I will take my responses off the air. And Joe, keep on. Have a good day.
All right. Thank you for the call. An important thing to understand, by the way, just statistically, owning a pistol actually increases the likelihood that you will be shot by your pistol. When I talked about the children shooting grown-ups, those kids were not acting in aggression. They simply didn't understand the full implication of what they had in their hands. This is a very, very peculiar society in this respect. I don't think there's ever been anything quite like it. And remember also that when the original Second Amendment was written, the concept of a gun was of a hunting weapon, which could be used to kill people, but which took a lot of work to load and fire and repeat that process. I got to take a break here and tell you some stuff. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Alternative Radio, we hear a talk by scholar Cornel West, who I have tremendous respect for, entitled On the Road to Freedom. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia. At 10:15, Flashpoints is Authors in Politics. A gay Muslim filmmaker shares his thoughts on Sunday's massacre. And constitutional scholar David Cole addresses the history of Florida's gun laws. And I want to thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. Not a current member? Hey, get with it. You can go to KBOO.fm and clicking on Donate Today. You certainly should support the station. It's very important. The station is important. The culture needs this programming. 231-8187. Let's talk, sadly, about what happened in Florida. And I would, rather than talking about the fact that there's lots of guns out there, I really would like us to consider what homophobia or hatred of the other is about. I mean, it embraces all of these cultural phenomena, the hatred of Hispanics, the absolute hatred of persons of color, the hatred of women, the misogyny that we see in our society. And I would argue that this guy, this killer, essentially had what used to be called in psychiatry, a homosexual panic, drawn to the community. We know he went there often, drawn to those ideas and repulsed by his own feelings. He turns his feelings, which had already been exhibited in attacks on his wife, and then in his madness makes this weird, horrible attack. It's self-hate carried out on others. 231-8187. Leslie, you're on the air.
Hello.
Yeah.
The last caller I thought was a person on the fundamental problem, but didn't quite get there. What I'm calling to comment on is the fundamental reaction on how we solve this that has been gaining most of the media attention is there's a common factor in all of it, whether it's from the government, whether it's from a Democrat, whether it's from a Republican. And the problem solution is always violence. State-sponsored terror, state-sponsored violence, or state-enacted violence. We have Hillary Clinton now saying, well, we should go bomb ISIS in response to this. Of course, Paul Ryan says we're at war with Islamic terror. And, of course, Trump's going to say all that, too, and more. And it's, you know, in a state-sponsored arena, it's not hatred that is the cause of all this. It's, I think, the love of war and profits, war profiteering, and the money associated with that. The answer always seems to be the same, that, well, we need to go bomb someone somewhere, somehow. So now they're talking about, you know, bombing more civilian populations in the Levant, Syria, Iraq, etc. And that's kind of what got us into this, a lot of this problem already. It's kind of the guy didn't have in Orlando, wasn't being directed by anybody in the Levant. It's not ISIS that was directing him. He called up and pledged his allegiance to ISIS, but as I understand, he also pledged his allegiance to Hezbollah and other Islamic factions that are adamantly opposed to ISIS too. So, you know, that's a real issue that could be addressed. But the only time you hear Republicans talk about mental health issues is when they're trying not to talk about guns. So if there's not a gun massacre that's happened in the last week that they're directly addressing, they're cutting funds for mental health care.
I appreciate your observations. I'm going to let you go, but I want to say something that's really important. From the time I was a little kid to now, playing with guns, involvement with guns, this comes out of World War II and then out of the Cold War and then into the Vietnam era, Korean War, Vietnam era, and now our war, the Cheney War against the Middle East, probably over oil, but other issues as well. All of this creates a culture of violence, which we all understand exists, but we like to think of it, at least I like to think of it, kind of abstract. You know, it's a culture of violence. Kids play with guns. Blah, blah, blah. No, it's beyond that. It is a culture that essentially argues that the solving of problems involves the destruction of other people. And that assumption has animated our society from 1940 to today. Before that, it also existed, but it was not so ubiquitous. It's now time to really consider what is implied by all of this. All this rage, all this panic around what constitutes masculinity, all this hatred of women, all of this hatred of the other, of persons of color, of persons of different languages, the appearance of a successful candidate for president of the United States who preaches anti-Muslim thinking, who preaches all kinds of vicious ideas, including the notion, remember that Trump has always had this notion, that the legitimate president of the United States was not born in the United States and is really a secret Muslim. This is all not only crazy, but common. And there are significant millions of people who buy into this in an economy which has left the American worker in a very poor situation. All of this together is a madness that can only lead over and over again to really bad outcomes. And I think we need to address that. I think we need to address it in a lot of ways. The horror of the attack on a homosexual community in Florida is not an isolated event. It turns out that hate crimes against other sexual orientations is the major form of hate crime reported right now. So we need to understand this horror. We need to understand that it is about the other and that it is about our own fears projected onto the other. And it is not something that can be simply solved by people decrying it. It's more than that. And it would be good to pass laws against these kinds of weapons. But again, we're not going to seize them. There's plenty of them out there. The mindset, the Bundys, for example, the mindset that use of arms is a solution to problems both domestically and internationally, that's a bad idea, a bad way of thinking, a very regressive pattern. And it is a dominant pattern of our whole culture. I grew up. Saturday matinees, movies, and comics, comedy, short comedies, short violent serials, cartoons, which often featured incredible violence. All of that was my cultural heritage. And I'm going to assume it was many of yours as well. And I think that when it transferred to television, the same thing was true. And I'm horrified, I'm sickened, and I really, really can only think that we are on a path to essentially, given environmental issues, major cataclysmic form of destruction. I want to hear from you. Cheer me up, 231-8187. Harry.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure, man.
In the 1980s, the controversy about the Glock was the Glock held 17 bullets.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, a semi-automatic automatic pistol can only hold 9. And so they changed the law so it can be allowed to be purchased in this country. And when they did that, they also did some other changes, like a shotgun could only hold 4 shells. Well, now they have one called the street sweeper that holds 40.
Oh, my favorite weapon, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, yeah. And the controversy about, and they also allowed the magazine clips for the semi-automatic weapons. But the issue about semi-automatic weapons, why the military, well, the police don't like civilians to have is its pistol grip handle. With the pistol grip handle, you could just point at a subject and you'd probably hit it and kill it. We grew up with, remember the TV show, The Rifleman?
Yeah.
Well, he didn't have a pistol grip pistol because on the rifle, he couldn't hit the side of a barn in real life. But anyway, also the price of a AR-15. Did you know it's over $700 each?
Well, I've never tried to buy one, so
yeah,
I don't
but
know.
They're very, very expensive. And also, you know, it's the gun violence in the black community. One of the reasons why there's a large gun violence in the black community because they don't have this the same police protection as the rest of rest of the city. So, so having a pistol is for not only for their protection, but also, hate to say it, but to get revenge. And a good example is if you ever read the autobiography of Little Richard, the singer, that's mm-hmm. okay. Well, back in the 50s, someone killed his father. And he brought the person to police. This is the person who shot my father. What the police said, well, you ends take care of your own business. And
wow.
They would not solve the crime. So, this is why there's a lot of guns around. And also, remember, police departments are only 100 to 150 years old. They still don't have it right.
Well, I agree with you. I also think that there is an unhealthy linkage in our society, and I don't want to get into some kind of Freudian conversation here, but an unhealthy linkage between masculinity and weapons, particularly rifles and pistols. Okay, yeah. I'm going to go on to the next person. We're going to be...
Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, thank you a lot, man. 231-8187. Andrew, you're on the air.
Hey there. I would describe myself as extremely progressive. I would I describe Bernie Sanders as a moderate compared to my views, but essentially, all of the... I hear what you're saying about, you know, the gun culture and the masculinity being directly related to or associated with, you know, weapons and things of that sort, because there is the, well, I'm an idealist, so I go the route of the strong will protect the weak. I will protect those who cannot protect themselves. Thus far, with all of these terrible, terrible shootings, they all end one of two ways. Either someone shoots them, or they shoot themselves. I cannot think of a single incident where it's gone a different way. You were describing that you feel as though we're heading towards a cataclysmic event that's very scary. And with people like Trump, and honestly, Trump makes people like Ted Cruz look sane. With people like that as potential public figures and role models, my biggest fear is a society with unarmed Democrats. Keep them, you know, have guns just in case. And if things happen, and basically I almost think, you know, if Ted Cruz did get into power, he'd come for the Democrats, you know, like not so much a ethnic cleansing as so much a party cleansing. But and with Democrats like Hillary Clinton, they're coming at us from both sides, man. I mean, it's scary, and
okay.
It's a terrifying
Let me acknowledge that your fears are understandable, But it is at root an assumption that violence and aggression are the inevitable outcome, and that a protection from that makes absolute sense, particularly the use of and having these kinds of weapons. It doesn't protect you. It cannot protect you. In the end, it can only lead to a cataclysmic, destructive phenomenon. I don't have answers, but I do want to understand that a combination of misogyny, of racism, hatred for homosexuals, all of these things come together in violence of a horrible sort. And all of it has to do with men defining themselves in the most rigid kinds of masculine terms. It's time we looked at that as well as looking at the actual fact of gun violence. I'll see you all next week. I want you all to think about this in many, many ways. We cannot continue like this. Well, unfortunately, we can, but we should not continue like this. It is horrible. It is wrong. It will bring the nation down.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Real Cool Film Series at the Clinton Street Theater. The film this month, The Case of the Three-Sided Dream, showing Wednesday, June 15th at 7 p.m. The Case of the Three-Sided Dream tells the story of a multi-instrumentalist, Rashawn Roland Kirk, who went from a blind infant to a child prodigy to adult visionary to a political activist and finally to a paralyzed showman. Kirk was a seemingly superhuman musical force who played literally until the day he died. Again, that's The Case of the Three-Sided Dream, Wednesday, June 15th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. 2-5 be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. You're listening to